As a child, I entered Epping Forest through a picture. The Victorian print on the magnolia wall of my parents' living room was the portal that took me there. Branches reached out from the black and white ink into a dismal glade, threatening to drag me into their hollow, secret places, their gnarls and walls. In the sky, wind-blown scraps of birds. A man, ragged and set about in the gale, trudging slowly toward the dark mass of the distant forest. He seemed so insubstantial to me, an inhuman wraith or perhaps a man doomed, about to be swallowed up and never released. I knelt on a chair and stared at this picture for hours, at once compelled by it, yet struck by an unnerving dread. Now, at the age of 36, I found myself sitting opposite a man just like the etched wanderer in the kitchen of my uncle and auntie's house in Thaden Boys, a village towards the northern end of the forest. I won't refer to him by name because he doesn't want to be found. I don't want to take away his Epping Forest, a place he couldn't have expected to see again on that day a few years ago when he climbed onto a chair, fastened a dog leash to a light fitting, and fashioned a noose to put round his neck. The man who lived in the forest was matter-of-fact and bright-eyed that morning. My auntie passed him a biscuit and asked what had happened to the mobile phone he'd been given in case of emergencies when he was alone in his camp somewhere out in the woods. He looked at her, bemused. "I don't mind," he said. "I'm a forest spirit. I'm just more content getting rid of the radio, the telephone, the trappings." It was a dreary day in the middle of a mild January, and across the road the trunks of Epping Forest were an unforgiving grey, dormant now until spring, lifeless as sculptures made of steel slag. Outside the kitchen door, chaffinches and coal tits negotiated their shifts on a container stuffed with pumpkin seeds. My eyes were drawn to a ghostly outline on the window where the attack of a sparrowhawk, not spotting the panes of glass that separated it from the trees of Epping Forest, on a feeding songbird had thumped to a premature conclusion, its near death captured with an imprint of oily wings. The man was almost 70, stood around 6 feet tall, and held himself solidly, despite an awkward gait caused by severe arthritis. His head was bald on top, but hair, yellow-white nicotine curtains, curled down his neck into a gloriously unkempt beard that was frayed at the edges, like half-hearted winter ice on a pond. His skin was deeply grooved and tanned a rich brown that seemed at odds with a life spent under the trees. Beneath fox whisker brows, his large round eyes were an intense blue. He peered at me inquisitively, clearly wondering who I was and why I was there. The week before, my auntie had intercepted him on his morning walk to the Costa coffee machine in Tesco to ask if he wouldn't mind stopping by. To be honest, I was as perplexed as he was. I was distracted, conscious that the last time I'd been in this house, everything had been different. Over the decade and a half I'd lived in London, rising rents had forced me to make my way from the centre out towards Epping Forest, from the edges of the city and Old Street to Hackney and eventually Walthamstow. I moved there a few years before with my girlfriend, Alice, and when I entered through the front door for the first time, my impulse had been to race upstairs and look out of the bedroom window. Over the William Morris Gallery and beyond the streets of the suburb of Chingford, I could see past London, where Epping Forest was a green slab against the late summer haze. I imagined everything beneath that rich canopy was peaceful and green. The warm smell of beech leaves, the birdsong and the filtered light. I had dreamed of living near this landscape for years.